All right, we are live. Welcome to the pre-show of Bitcoin Veterans. You can see our special guest tonight is Ella Huff, and we're glad to have you here. This is where we kind of just warm up and have a good time and talk about whatever's in the news cycle and all that kind of stuff, what's kind of been picking your brain. I got to tell you guys, I saw yesterday where we were watching who was the congresswoman from Minnesota who was talking about the fair democracy down there in El Salvador.
Oh my God! Is her name Ilhan Omar or something?
Yeah. Ilhan Omar. That's correct. Somali, who was just apparently outed as kind of being a Somali operative almost in Congress.
She was referring to the Somalian president as our president.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was what?
Excuse and now me? she's going after the elections down there in El Salvador, and you're like, what are you doing? Like, what on earth? Like, you got a lane, and it's maybe it's definitely
not even a legislator for that country. You are in a different country, lady.
Yeah, it's wild.
Taking a page out of Elizabeth Warren's book, huh? By not mining her panel.
Well, that in Lindsey Graham's book too, you know, Lindsey Graham. Oh man, let's nuke Iran, you know, or whoever it is.
Well, now did you see like they're saying that yeah, it's like Iranian an Iranian backed group, but that's based out of Iraq, and it's like, oh, well, we should go to a war with Iraq again because that worked out good the first, second, and third time.
We're going to have a very hard time watching our P's and Q's here tonight.
Man. I didn't swear, yeah.
Not yet.
No. I was close. I was really close.
I was throwing that rope out there. I was baiting you a little bit. And good job. Everybody passed. Way to go, guys.
Oh, nice. First 2 minutes, we made it.
Quit chumming the water,
What's that algorithm cutoff? Is it like first 5 minutes, or did they up it to 10 minutes now?
I think we're up to 10 for all of our great behavior.
Ella will make it easy for us to abide by that. So,
yes, I have a rule where I don't say curse words ever. So I will help you with the algorithm.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that part of the entry into Cornell?
No, it's just just a me thing.
I'm just kidding.
It's a nice, refreshing rule. Yeah.
That takes a lot of self discipline, I would imagine, because. Most people nowadays, I mean, they drop words. Like guys like this drop words all the time. It's a regular part of their vernacular.
It's our culture.
It's our culture.
I appreciate that Ella is not trying to appropriate our culture. Right? That's our thing.
The last thing we need is white women appropriating our culture.
Oh, no.
I'm kidding. We're going to have
it. It begins. Jeez. Risk over of banning number.
You take away 30? The capability and the freedom and the liberty to swear as much as we want. We all start to like itch and like scratch like Dave Chappelle.
Crackhead. Y'all got any more of them swear words?
That'd be a great t-shirt or a sticker.
It would, actually. That's actually not a bad idea.
A good Bitcoin Veterans shirt idea.
They have like parental control over the top of it.
Ella, I just want to say thanks for coming on. It's very cool of you to do that.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I've been very busy this week.
Yeah, it's been a busy week, but I mean, every week is busy. I'd rather busy than slow. So it's all good.
Amen.
Does this interfere with your study time and all that? Or do you get maybe some credit in Bitcoin for it? Or
For the podcast or just the busy week?
For the podcast in Bitcoin.
No study credit for it, but it's nice to be with you all. And it's just, you know, it's always good to have these conversations. It's kind of like maybe soul credit. Like you learn something, you get to spend time around Bitcoiners. So that type of credit.
That's actually an interesting thing. You just mentioned Shane, Ella, if you haven't identified anything yet in the future, if there is something that we could help you with, as far as class credits by bringing you back on to talk about things. Should do that.
Okay. Yep. I'll look into it. I know there's, you know, there's different ways around like independent studies. You get credit for that with a professor. But I'm sure there's,
especially because you're going to be doing stuff with, we'll get into this later, obviously, or in a couple minutes, but like there's going to be game theory aspects, right? And adversarial thinking.
Yes, yes.
I think definitely. I think a couple of military guys might be able to help you out with that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, you also do get for my, we'll get into this, but for the kind of thesis committee, you are allowed to have outside of the university professors serve on that committee. So who knows, maybe some Bitcoin professors could join and then maybe we get study credit.
Ooh, there you go. I think we could probably track some people down that might be able to fit that.
Safe, I don't know. Professor, isn't he?
Yeah.
Who is?
Kaz is now a professor.
Okay.
Isn't he? Isn't that right, Alex? Didn't Kaz go to University of Oklahoma or Oklahoma State or something like that to teach?
Oh, does that make him? Yes. Does that make him a professor?
Well, actually, he messaged me today about it. I don't know. I maybe probably a title that you're a professor, assistant professor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just handing those out these days anyway,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know when I was in school, some of my guys was like, I don't know, buddy. You might be a little young for that. To be fair, I guess, you know, I went back to school after the Marine Corps. So I was just, you know, like 26, 27 years old. And some of my professors were a little bit on the young side teaching international business and affairs that I was just like, that's not the way it works.
Have you actually ever like talked with these people, or is it all based off of academia?
It's all theory.
I mean, it's kind of like my theory. How much of it is just that? Like, I've read all these books on it, and so I know I'm the expert. It's like, you should go apply those things, maybe.
That was like when I was finishing up. Actually, when I was in college before I deployed, one of my environment, like one of the capstones that we needed for my degree, I had to take an environmental whatever course, and the course was the professor was a former Enron scientist, and I was going into it, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna learn about how, you know, like conservation, all this other stuff, and he was in there, and he was like, he was one of the only professors I've had that was pushing against the climate catastrophism stuff before it really got like brought to light of what was going on. He's like, guys, all this stuff that you think you know about oil is wrong. And I'm like talking with other people in the class, I'm like, this guy's flipping nuts. And then it wasn't until like the last like 4 years, I'm like, holy crap, I was extremely wrong and he was very right, and I'm really glad I barely passed that class.
Yeah, I think one of the questions on the test was, what is the name of the course? And you've already failed that one. Environmental something. Duh.
Yeah, I don't know. Some hippie stuff. I don't know. That's probably what I wrote.
Oh, my Lord.
Are you guys ready to go? Let's all warmed up, stretched up. We've got the creative juices going.
Let's get amped up, dude.
Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, ladies and gents. It is going to be a great night. We do this every Thursday night now, 7 p.m. We've changed times. This is obviously not Wednesday. But yeah, every Thursday night, you can catch us here doing this, sometimes with guests, sometimes without guests. And we, as Bitcoin Veterans, put this together because we believe in Bitcoin, in the ability to give you a passion, to give you a mission, to give you some real purpose in this world. And I think that's a lot of what a lot of the guys that are veterans signed up for in the first place that maybe got a little disenchanted. Well, maybe they were in their tours for, you know, either in the U.S. or overseas. And now that we are plugging guys in from all over the country and all over the world, this thing is growing like gangbusters. So first and foremost, thanks to everybody out there that's doing everything that they can to grow this movement, that's interacting, that's doing the heavy lifting. the Citadel Group, the comms group, the guys out there from Operation Bitcoin. This is an honor to be part of and to do this on the front side of it. With all the back stuff going, we got to just give credit to everybody there first and foremost. Everybody in the audience that shows up every week, thank you very much. We have an amazing guest for you guys tonight. She's a scholar first and foremost. She founded the Cornell Bitcoin Club. She is a co-founder of Generation Bitcoin, which is one of my favorite things that I've seen pop up in this Bitcoin space. She's also one of the co-founders of the Bitcoin Students Network, and her name is Ella Huff. She joins us here tonight. Welcome. We are really, really proud to have you, and we're going to have a much different show tonight, I think, for a little while anyway.
No, thank you so much for having me. And I have to say that opener intro that you put together is incredible. I wasn't expecting that, but it was awesome.
Yeah, we guys with some crayons can do things here and there. surprise people once in a while.
Don't underestimate the power of the crayons.
That's right.
The secret is to chewing on them while you're working on
yeah.
it. Right?
Yeah, you don't want to fall asleep, for God's sakes. But anyway.
Should we just like jump straight into it? And like, Ella, I honestly, this might be just a reflection on how poor of a friend I am, but I want to know like what your background is, like how you got to Bitcoin. I don't know actually gotten that out of you.
Yeah. So I have this quote, you know, always be collecting dots, always be connecting dots. And so I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago, you know, really where did this all start? And I realized there's another avenue that I haven't touched on historically in the past. What I've shared before is I, you know, first came to Bitcoin for the number go up. I was in high school. I was in this really cool program. It was called Technology, Innovation, and Entrepreneurship. And you basically, all the years you're at the school, you take classes under one of those areas. And then your senior year, you put together a capstone project. And so I chose the innovation track. And one of the class requirements was just called blockchain. And that was it. So I took the class, didn't know anything. And Bitcoin was just like a blip, and it was very much focused kind of on supply chain. And I don't know, that's this UN Sustainable Development Goals and how blockchain can help with that. And then about a year later, I think it was, my mom and I went to the Oslo Freedom Forum, put on by the Human Rights Foundation. And that, I think, is when I really learned about Bitcoin and, you know, freedom go up. And that is where the kind of pivotal moment of falling down the rabbit hole occurred. But then kind of some of the other points that I look back at now that I didn't initially consider, the final capstone project for that program was I made like a financial literacy website called Asset. And then my spring of my freshman year of college, I took a class on creativity. And you got to choose a creator of your choosing. It could be anyone to study for the entirety of the semester. And I happened to choose Kathy Wood. And that was when I learned about creative destruction and disruptive innovation and trying to think across disciplines and different trends and asking questions over answers. And so I think there's just, you know, I had the kind of school first introduced to these topics. For about 2 years, I was also working at IBM on their STEM for Girls program and then their kind of educational platform called Skills Builds, and blockchain was somewhat of a topic area, but just essentially, I had all these different points coming at me. And I think now, looking back, it's easy to kind of see how they all contributed to me understanding Bitcoin and really falling down the rabbit hole. But all the credit goes to, I think, the Oslo Freedom Forum, and then Arsh Malu, who reached out on a Twitter space once, like, hey, do you want to join Generation Bitcoin? Actually, he and then Ashana Misra, who's the youngest Bitcoin Core contributor, and Autumn Domingo, who does a lot of UI UX in Bitcoin. She did Summer of Bitcoin. They founded it, and they really pulled me in and kind of made me feel like I had a community of students around me. So that's kind of, Mike, that was a long answer to your question, but a lot of different points that ultimately led up to finding Bitcoin.
I think everybody here knows that I'm not opposed to long answers, so I appreciate
it. <that. laughs>
Yeah.
So you wound up choosing Cornell. Was it one of your first choices for school, and why was Cornell one of your first choices?
Yeah, so when I was looking at schools, I had no geographic restriction. And actually, it's funny, I had one. I said, I do not want to be in New York City. I was like, that's kind of my only big no. I was just going for, you know, where do they offer what I want to study? And so I had done my junior year of high school in Beijing. It was supposed to be the entirety of the year, but COVID happened. And so we were only there about 5 months. But I started learning Chinese. When I landed in Beijing, I didn't know anything, and then had an incredible host family, incredible teachers, and picked it up. And I knew I wanted to keep learning Chinese. I had like a whole interest in AI at this point as well. And I had some interesting thoughts on, and we can go into this, but some of the characters in Chinese and ethics and how you can code ethics into a spoken language. Could you do the same in a computer language? And so I wanted to go to a school where I could study Chinese and computer science. And that was my requirement. Where can I do that? And in most schools, computer science is in the engineering school and Chinese is in the arts school. And so it's not very common that you can do both. Cornell has computer science in the arts college and the engineering college. It's the same degree, but your distribution or your elective classes are different depending which school you're in. And so it was where I could do Chinese and computer science. And there were a handful of other universities where I could as well. But I liked that Cornell was kind of in the middle of nowhere, nature. And it really just came down to the programs. But I did not get in. I applied ED, early decision, which is basically when you tell the school, like, if you accept me, I'm coming. So I did that, and I got deferred, which basically means we'll consider you with the rest of the application pool. We're not sure yet. So then, you know, the rest of the decisions came out in April, and I got the transfer offer, which was, you know, yes, you can come, but you need to wait until you're a sophomore, and then you kind of reapply. It's kind of an abridged process. And so that is how I wound up at NYU Shanghai for my freshman year of college. Because I wanted to go back to China. But here's where it kind of comes full circle. We were ready to go to China, and then we found out a couple weeks prior, sorry, you know, your visas were not approved. You can't go. You need to go to NYU New York. So kind of the funny element to all of this is I started off, you know, I don't want to be in New York City, and I ended up moving in freshman year of college to New York City. I only lasted a month. All my classes were online from Shanghai pretty much. So I think I was up from like, I don't know, 5 a.m. to 2 a.m. In different time zones of classes. And so I just reached out to the school. And I said, hey, you know, can I just take my classes from home? You know, there's no real need for me to be in the city. So I did that. I lived by myself for my freshman fall. And then springtime came around. Same story. We're going to go to China. Visas were not approved. So then I was in Houston for my spring. But it all worked out. I got to keep my job at IBM. So that was great. And now I'm here. So it was a long story to get here. It wasn't really just like you submit the application, you're in. But I am grateful for how it all worked out in the end.
Thanks for a great story too.
Well, and I mean, yes. Think about the perseverance too. I mean, you're already starting to see a pattern. Like,
yes,
good things don't fall into your lap, you know. And I think a lot of times when good things do fall into people's laps, they take them for granted anyway. But you know, the dedication that you've already started to show, I think, is a really good precursor to where we're going, why you're here in the first place. You've been able to do something that's pretty, you know, pretty spectacular. And in terms of, you know, the news, and I'll let, you know, you tell everybody kind of what the news is, but Ella is one of the first people I think in the country that's now I know the wording is you know, it, let's just, it's
diplomatic.
Yeah, it's academic wording. But you're going to be studying Bitcoin for your, I didn't say major, I guess, but for your degree at Cornell, which is pretty awesome.
Yes. Yes, I'm really excited. I think just the more time, you know, I've found that I've been able to learn about Bitcoin and spend time in the space, just the deeper you go, you're like, how do I just spend more time and energy focused on this? Is it just the most important thing I can be doing? And so, you know, I am at school and that takes up a huge chunk of my day. And I already found myself sitting in classes thinking about Bitcoin, writing notes in the margins of how I think it connects. And so now just to have the ability to just, you know, do it, like really, and then have some final work product, I am very grateful for.
It's really cool to see, like, I mean, Bitcoin is still pretty young, but to see it already filtering down into like the next generation, and it's all kind of like the internet, like my daughter being born with like, the internet, that's just a thing compared to me, like kind of growing up and like learning about it. You kind of coming in and learning about Bitcoin at really such a young age and being able to connect it in ways that like even the guys who have and gals who have been around it for a while, like just you just it's a whole fresh perspective. And it's just really it's really awesome. Like it's cool to hear you talk about it and like the work you've already done to like to get where you are, like Shane was saying, like it's very motivating. Like so I hope you're motivating younger people, but like I hope you know right now, like you're motivating all of us too. Like it's really cool.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I go ahead, Alex. Yeah.
Well, go ahead. If you had a comment you wanted to make there, go ahead. And then I'll ask you.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. So something you said a minute ago was that you consider this to be the most important thing you can be doing. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty big statement. I think for people who are younger, trying to figure out what they're going to do with their life, they're trying to figure out which career they should go into. They're trying to figure out, you know, how do I make it in the world? They're trying to figure out how do I make the money thing work. Like that sounds to me like a purpose-driven kind of a statement, and that's a very rare thing for anybody really to be able to understand. I mean, I know adults who are 40, 50, 60 years old who don't have a purpose that is defined to the point where they can say, this is the most important thing I can be doing. Mm-hmm. So would you mind expanding upon that? Why is this the most important thing you could be doing?
Yes. And I kind of have a couple of things that pop into my head. But the first one is, so my mom and I have this shared note on our phone, and it's just like a list of rules that not really rules, that they're not, you know, rigid, like the connotation that the word rules brings, but little nuggets of, you know, how to go about living life. And so the first one is just be a good human. And so, I mean, I just flipped through it, but I think, you know, that's just the number one. So it's like, okay, you know, if my job in life is I need to, you know, live each day, be a good human, how do I do that? And, you know, you touched on people are my age kind of in, I don't know if you said in search of a prize or, you know, what exactly your words were, but a lot of people my age, and I did this too, like checking a box, you know, I need to do well in school. I need to get into the best college I can get into. I need to get a good job and, you know, have all these things. But I realized, you know, my prize in life is not to make a lot of dollars as one component. You know, that's not the prize I'm after. I don't want the, you know, coveted brand name, I don't know, company just to have more dollars to buy some object or something like that. But to more directly connect to Bitcoin, I think something that's really struck me recently is that looking at the white paper, network is written 21 times. And I don't think that's an accident. And what I have really come to learn and how I talk to the school as well about this is just the difference between little B Bitcoin and big B Bitcoin, the network. And so, you know, I just hear, I think it's Jeff Booth in my head when he says, you know, money is tool shaped reality. Economics, by extension, money is the foundation that gives rise to everything else. And so we live in a world where our money is broken. And so then if you think about kind of to incorporate SAFE and the whole idea of, you know, the fiat network, Bitcoin is the best form of money that we have. And I think that it will, you know, cascading effects into how our society functions and looks like. And so I think we're at a really critical transition point. And so I'm heavily influenced by the sovereign individual in my proposal, where it talks about, you know, we have a new wave of civilization coming. You need to think outside the system. You need to take nothing for granted. Few heretics bother to think how society transitions from one to the next. And I think Bitcoin is how we transition from one to the next. And so that is why it is the most important academic endeavor that I could be focused on. And, you know, I also love the Canute quote where Bitcoin isn't the signal, but it's the greatest noise remover. And so, you know, if I just think about how do I want to live my life and be a good human, you know, I need to remove the noise. And so then we just could dive into all of the, I don't know, second order effects of Bitcoin, low time preference, proof of work, all those concepts that you learn, I think have had a very positive effect on my life and how I live it. And so just, you know, as I've said, spend time in this space. I just think it all kind of ladders up to just be a good human. And, you know, that's why, and then we have, you know, the society effects that I mentioned, why I want to study it and really see where our world is heading. So another long-winded answer.
I'm going to make one quick comment. Some of these guys are dying to jump in here with more questions. And the comment is really based as hell. Right? Anybody who's listening to this, we need to duplicate her by like a million times.
So you, Ella, you said that you had recently just started like revisiting that whole kind of approach or like looking at the white paper. What caused you to revisit or look back at the white paper again?
Honestly, it's just because I have this odd fascination with numbers. that was how I think. So actually, we'll tie it back to the Oslo Freedom Forum.
When you go through this, can you also talk about your article that you wrote specifically about the numbers for Bitcoin?
Sure. Mining? Yeah. So I'll give kind of the funny story of where I think the origin of this number fascination started. So I went to a Catholic school when I was growing up. I'm not Catholic, and we had to kind of pray the rosary in the chapel every 2 weeks or something it was. But only if you were Catholic. And if you weren't Catholic, you just kind of had to sit there. And the chapel was very beautiful. There were a lot of stars on the ceiling. And so I would kind of just sit there and count the stars. And I'm not sure why then that then just translated into all elements of my life, counting and looking at numbers. But it did. And so I was learning about Bitcoin and started seeing numbers like 21 million, 6102, every 2016 blocks. When was the white paper published? And then you just started making a list, just like a notes app on my phone, which then Mike is where the article arose. And I'm getting the timeline a little fuzzy in my head somewhere, but I think after the Oslo Freedom Forum, I then went to read the US budget. I just kind of pulled down the PDFs, and I don't know why I was then on that train of thought, but it all just started to hit me of how big of a deal this probably was. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to write. And just generally in life, if I don't write something, I'm really horrible at explaining it or talking about it. And so I just wrote it. I published it on Medium. I guess this is a good note. I have a Medium where I also published all of my college essays because I think I've really tried to adopt the open source. Like any work I've done, if it's helpful to anyone, you know, here it is. So I published it on Medium. And then I just had random blog things coming like, hey, can we publish this? I didn't think anyone would care about, you know, this article that I'd written. Then I just reached out to Bitcoin Mag and said, hey, is this of interest to you all? And they said, oh, yes. And actually, they really helped me kind of make it better. I don't remember exactly what the first draft of it looked like, but they had some great comments. And the article as it is today is much better than what I first initially drafted. So then, Mike, why was I looking at the white paper? I just find the number aspect in Bitcoin interesting. And I was curious how many times network was in the white paper and Bitcoin itself. And it turns out it's 21. And then Bitcoin is mentioned twice, once in the title, once in the website domain. But I think it's also interesting that, you know, I mean, obviously it's the first word in a sentence. Maybe that's why Bitcoin is capitalized, but there is no, except for the website domain, like littlecase, lowercase Bitcoin.
How do people find your Substack?
Actually, it's Medium. It's on my Linktree, but I can also, no worries, but it's just, if you go to the linktr.ee/Ella Huff, everything's there. But yeah, the Medium, random articles I've written in class, and all the college essays, and I don't know, a variety of things are on there.
Does network have a special value to you? Is that one of the reasons why you just happened to pick the word network and you wondered why nobody has ever focused on it?
No, it was really just, and I wish I could remember, because it took me a while before I knew there was a difference in Bitcoin, like, you know, big or little b. But okay. It was from there, just someone telling me about, and I really wish I could remember where I learned of it, but I don't. And I was just curious, because I think just for, you don't understand Bitcoin. There was a great tweet where it's like, you don't, you know, learn Bitcoin by just reading the white paper. You learn and you study Bitcoin through, oh my gosh, it's such a long list, but it's cryptography, distributed systems, math, economics, game theory, praxeology, psychology, philosophy, all of that. Like, there's just so much in this world that I don't know every day. I feel like I kind of know less, but that's such a gift to have some topic area that you learn and get to be curious. And so anyways, I find that very fascinating and compelling for Bitcoin. And so I was just curious about the network aspect.
I was going to say, for anybody who's out there that is curious about that link, I'm going to have it in the show notes, but you can also go to Ella's Twitter page and it's right there for you. under her bio. Very simple. So if you don't want to wait for me until tomorrow morning, then you can get it right there. Ella, I got to tell you, you know, listening to you and having you on this panel is it's amazing. When you talk about the network, I think this is one of my favorite pieces of Bitcoin in general is people, right? Is this intangible piece that isn't written into the code anywhere besides talking about network, right? I had the pleasure of meeting you out of Pacific Bitcoin this year, which is a fantastic festival. If anybody's interested, you get to meet amazing people like Ellen and the whole group here. I think minus Mike was out there. I got to tell you, you know, seeing this and seeing the intangibles, what is one of the things that has struck you since being in Bitcoin and being at some of these events with Bitcoiners that's really been, you know, maybe the best part of Bitcoin for you?
Yeah, and I also think this is kind of the first community I've had outside of school. I mean, it's not like I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but there wasn't really anything before Bitcoin. Like, I had my local community at school. I've moved schools a lot, so I'm actually grateful I have friends kind of all over the place. But I don't know. It's not like I owned a house and it's like my neighborhood of community, or I don't know, people you grow up with for forever in that sense. But it's just, and I actually, so Bitcoin Park, I was able to go there in September. And I don't, for anyone that hasn't been there, for me, when I first walked up, it's just like you get this feeling that you can't really describe. You just feel like, oh, I'm in the right place. And yeah. When I was looking at colleges and high schools, actually, too, my mom told me, you know, Ella, like, you're just going to get there and you're just going to feel like, oh, I'm at peace. I can breathe. This is where I feel like I can be successful. And for me, whenever you go to a Bitcoin event, it can be a meetup. I think the Houston meetup was really the first kind of Bitcoin environment I went to, or it's Pacific Bitcoin was the first conference, or maybe also Freedom Forum was first, but true Bitcoin conference. You just go, and it's hard to put into words, but it's just a feeling where you're like, okay, like my soul just feels more at peace and I can breathe. And it's just interesting conversations and people are friendly and want to talk about real things. So yeah, it's, I don't know, for me, it's a feeling I can't quite put into words. And maybe I'll shout out Mickey Koss's wife, Lindsay, because I know she wrote a piece after Pacific Bitcoin that kind of touched on the Bitcoin community. So she probably said it better than I could just now.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say and I'll be brief, which is not my strong suit. So, but I will say that, like, especially with like the conference aspect, Ella, like, have you been to like BitBlock Boom yet? Like the more smaller, intimate ones?
No, I haven't.
I think I would recommend, especially if you're going to go this year. Shout out to Gary. We've got that discount code for you guys if you guys want to, like, you know, shoot us a DM. But there is an interesting kind of withdrawal, specifically after BitBlock Boom, that I've had for every single one since 2021, where like you get, like, you have so many of those great conversations, but it's not. Like in normal life, I don't know about you guys, but at least in my normal life, those kinds of conversations in person are like a once a month kind of thing. But then you go to like something like BitBlock Boom, and it's every conversation you have with every individual from like 7 a.m. to like 11 p.m. for 4 days straight. And then you come home and your body and it's almost like your mind is just like readjusting from like the excitement and the fight or flight back down to just like, okay, we don't need to be running at 110% operational capacity the whole time. But like, I would invite you to join us at one of these conferences for sure, because it's a lot of fun.
Speaking of which, anybody who wants to go to either BitBlock Boom or to the big one coming up, Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville, we have a discount code for both. That is an extremely deep discount code. By extremely deep, I mean like almost free if you're part of the Bitcoin Veterans group. You don't have to be a veteran, by the way. We have parts of our organization that are set up for civilians who are adjacent and interested in helping or getting on the mission, so to speak, with Bitcoin veterans. So if you want to go to one of those things, connect with us. We can we can hook you up.
Yeah, and they're moving, so don't wait until July. Like these discounted tickets are going to be gone long before then. So if you're going to go, get a hold of us. And if you can't use your ticket, maybe sell it to somebody on the cheap. You might even be able to make some money. I don't know. But I know some of you guys are entrepreneurs out there. But this piece of going to these network meetups, wherever it is, whether it's a local meetup, whether it's a regional meetup, national, global, whatever, if you guys get the chance, get into that arena. Find this network, because this is where Bitcoin changes people and it changes the way we connect with other people. And you know, for, you know, the few, I guess I've been to quite a few of these things now. I find it refreshing. A lot of times we're not even talking about Bitcoin. It's an amazing thing. Is like when you're not with these people and you're trying to orange people all the time, you know, you're talking about Bitcoin to people that don't want to hear about it. And then when you're around people that want to hear about Bitcoin, most of the time you're not even talking about it. You're talking about real life and how things matter, spirituality, what you're doing in the community, things that you're looking forward to in terms of building, whether it's citadels, whether it's, you know, homeschool or homesteads or anything like that. And I mean, it is quite the fascinating group of people. And I'm going to tell you right now, some of the brightest people I've ever met.
The first, the night that I flew into for Pacific Bitcoin, like that night we go to one of the Swan private events, and that's when I'm first meeting Shane and Alex like in person for the first time, and Gabe. And at one point in the night, me and Gabe were just talking to Tomer Stroblight, and man, Stroblight, we had such a good conversation. Like, it wasn't even about Bitcoin or anything. We were just talking, and that was just the start of what I didn't even realize was just going to be this awesome weekend of like exactly what you guys have all talked about. Like, it was like a body high of just this, just energy. It was just like pure energy. It was like Bitcoin energy was seeping out of all of us, and we were all just like connected or something. It was a Wade in the audience knows exactly what I'm talking about, because me and him talked about it significantly, because I met him there too. It was just an awesome time. And like you said, it's not just that you're talking about Bitcoin or freedom tech or anything like that. Even just like a relatively more mundane conversation was just so much better, just around just good people.
Ella, maybe there hasn't been enough time yet. Have you had any interesting interactions with like students with the whole Bitcoin and the club and like that whole relationship, or has there just been not, like, cause I'm curious, like I would think, and maybe it's just that the university community just isn't like super plugged into the whole Bitcoin topic yet, which I would fully believe, but has there been any interest or conversation around like this development, or has there just been not enough time?
No, I think there's a lot. And actually, first, before I answer your question, I wanted to say that, and the website's out for this, it hasn't officially been announced, but if you're a student and you want to go to Bitcoin 24, Generation Bitcoin has partnered with Bitcoin Magazine to give free student tickets. And so there's also, the website is published, so I think I'm good to say that, but more formal announcements will be coming on that. But Mike, to your question, I think so. I have a couple examples. It's not on that website yet, but we'll share that. It's on Bitcoin Mags.
I'm the producer.
But so we had Club Fest. So there's Club Fest in the fall and in the spring. For the spring, that's this Sunday. And so I have a banner for Cornell Bitcoin. It's very official. So I'm excited for that. But in the fall, a lot of people, so I was in Cornell blockchain. Most people, maybe they'd never heard of blockchain, but they knew of Bitcoin over anything else.
Nice.
So that's one example. And then, so I'm in this college scholar program now, and we have weekly seminars just for the program. And 2 weeks ago was the first one. And so everyone kind of goes around the room and describes what their topic is, or you know, what they're studying. So of course I say I'm studying Bitcoin, and the whole class laughs. Like everyone was kind of silent, and then just you say the word, and it wasn't like a mean laugh, it was just like, whoa, this kind of caught us off guard. So people know what it is. And then I've had a lot of interesting conversations. Just, I mean, all my friends are very receptive. I get texts like, oh, I need to learn more about this Bitcoin thing, or, you know, funny ones. And yeah, people just we had a 10-minute break in one of my lectures, and inevitably we end up talking about Bitcoin. That's cool. And so like, couldn't have been more interested. I was talking with someone yesterday in between office hours, and at first they were like, oh, but it's this scam thing that takes, you know, my money. There's all these websites. And I mean, it doesn't take that long to just say, you know, kind of just level set a little bit and just kind of take a step back. And I think one of the best approaches that I learned from Troy Cross was, don't ask someone why they believe something. It's better to ask them how they came to believe something. It kind of takes the onus off of them, or the pressure to go on the like defensive of why they believe it. I think, you know, Mike, people are aware. I haven't even, you know, talked about like published the club, but I already have like 20 signups. So progress. Nice. I mean, I was expecting like, nice. And I haven't even done the kind of email blast to my friends yet.
Have you watched Oppenheimer?
No.
You're gonna end up like Oppenheimer, where you expect it to just be one person in the class, and then there's gonna be like a whole like procession of people listening to you talk.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to figure out the AV. It might be a little rough the first couple of times, but I'm gonna try to record every meeting. I'll put it up as soon as possible. But then if people can't make a meeting, it's going to be weekly meetings, Thursdays at 5:30. and for an hour. And we'll have different topics. I'm working on the schedule of topics and so on. But yeah, everything's going to be recorded so people can go back and watch, or we'll try and assign like maybe pre-materials, post-materials, just make it easy for people to kind of have a hook somewhere.
So cool. I love it. I love this stuff, man. And the idea that like people are open to discussing it, it's like, it's not, it's so different of a mindset from like TradFi. You get guys like Jamie Dimon at Davos, like pooping on it, like, oh, it's only for criminals. You know, it's like, I love that, that younger people have like this open mind. They don't just sit there and assume everything, right? Like they're like, oh, I need to learn. And that, that is fantastic, man. Something to consider. Yeah. I'm not telling you what to do, but like, I bet you like there's a whole slew of Bitcoiners, like very knowledgeable Bitcoiners that would love to just come to Cornell and like participate in your meetings.
I'd love it.
Right. Yes. Like if you're interested in doing that, let's spin that shit up. Like we can make, oh, excuse me.
I'm
you did it.
I just lost $50, man. It was all on Jordan, and then Alex took it. Like, darn it!
Let's
Mike,
go.
I'll pay you later.
Yeah. No, I'd love that. I brought some Bitcoiners to Cornell this fall, which was really great, and I think people appreciate it. And it's just good to hear from. I mean, we've talked about community. It's just good to know people in the space, and just the personal element is really great. So for sure, would love that.
I think you're going to do okay with the AV part. I don't know what kind of mic you're using and all that kind of stuff, but I wonder, as we were having a conversation, I was like, man, she's really dialed in on her sound too. I don't know if you guys notice. I notice this kind of stuff as the guy that sometimes produces the show. And I got to say, thank you very much for doing that. You're going to do fine with your AV work.
Thank you. Yes, full transparency. So I got, Jordan sent the email the other day and kind of your notes about pre-coming on the show. I was like, oh, we really recommend the Yeti mic. Or I think that's what this is called. And so I got on Amazon, and normally it takes forever to get anything to Ithaca. But it was like, you know, whatever color could come by yesterday. I was like, okay, got to order this so that my sound is good and it's official. So nice. I'm glad that it works well.
That's awesome. I need to start putting a link in it though that like gets us some money.
Yeah, because then you get the Amazon. Yeah.
Man.
Jordan hasn't sworn and he recommended the Yeti mic.
Wow. There we go. So Ella, I just got a question come through to ask to elaborate on if you can or if you're comfortable with it, who did you bring through Cornell? Like, did you say somebody specifically speak at Cornell, or did you just take them through?
So there were six people that came. So the first, I wanted to have different topic areas. So the first one I called like Bitcoin development-ish, but Lisa, and I always pronounce her name wrong, but Lisa Nygut, she came and did a kind of a Bitcoin 101-ish, walked through mempool, all of that. That was incredible. And then the next one, Brian from Wolf, this was like Bitcoin Lightning Accelerator. He came, did a presentation. That was incredible. And then the third was I hosted a screening of Stranded, the precursor to Dirty Coin. And so for that, we had a big room, had the screening, and then it's about 17 minutes long. And then we hosted a panel. So Alana, the producer, came herself. And then we had Troy Cross, Amanda Fabiano, Kyle Schnapps, and then Taylor Monick. And I was very grateful for all of them to come. And I think everyone or most everyone walked out of the room and was like, wow, like we just didn't know. You know, I've been saying this stuff, but I'm not an expert and I can't say it as well as, you know, the five of them together talking about it. So I think it's just so incredible when you can have Bitcoiners come and share.
Yeah.
Not trying to tell you what to do, but like, you know, who would be really good would be like D++.
Yeah. Jason. So actually, yeah. So D++, I played her, Natalie Brunell interview where she kind of explains Bitcoin mining and that it's not a cryptographic hash puzzle. But she, this past summer, she hosted a workshop for Generation Bitcoin, which was amazing. And we're in the works going to try and put together a second one. But I know she just went to Lipscomb University and did a panel there. But Alex, sorry, I think I interrupted there. You were saying someone else, but would love to.
I was also going to suggest maybe get Jason Lowry out there.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yes. I have software. I haven't read the whole thing, but I feel kind of cool that I have it before now. You can't buy it.
Don't tell anybody. You might get mugged.
It's like he knows something about scarcity. I don't think they made him take it down. I think he was like, look, I learned about the scarcity thing. No, bump my numbers up.
Yeah.
Smart.
It's not a bad move, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just watched his TED that's like 15, 20 minutes. And so, I mean, I'd love to play that at least in one of the kind of club meetings, because I think Bitcoin is for everyone. Like, whatever you're interested in, I really think there's a place for you to contribute, whatever skill, whatever your interest is. And so, you know, one thing in the club is I don't want to just talk about Bitcoin as money. I want to talk about the other areas and different topics that, you know, might resonate with people. So, you know, any and all topics I want to discuss.
Are there any books that stick out to you that kind of dive into those areas outside of Bitcoin is just money that you would recommend, that maybe your favorites out there for everybody?
So I think my top two favorites are Price of Tomorrow and Check Your Financial Privilege. Obviously the Bitcoin Standard is great, but for me, like, having a story, having a what does this really matter in the context of the world is hugely helpful. And then I have to say my favorite book right now, which I haven't finished, but I can't wait to finish it, is Crypto Sovereignty by Eric Kaysen. This just in the context, I wouldn't say this is a primer book, but I think it's just really fascinating, like the care and the language that he uses, and especially in regards to the word crypto and what it really means and how the meaning is kind of, I don't know if obfuscated is the right word, but just the philosophy, psychology, and that is very interesting right now.
Awesome. I always appreciate that people are like my friends and the members of the community that are willing and interested in specifically talking about Bitcoin outside of the monetary and the financial like gains aspect, right? Mm-hmm. Because like you were saying, there's a whole world outside of that tiny little circle that like we can all like give credit to, is that like Bitcoin touches all of it, right? Mm-hmm. And like we're like, by not discussing all of that, like you're missing like 80% of the picture.
Yeah. And then I haven't read it. Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but it's on my list. And I have it, is Energy and Civilization. Harry recommended, he's like, Ellie, you have to read this, and I will read it. But I would say that's probably another one that at least I've heard is very good for outside of Bitcoin kind of understanding.
Can I add another one onto your reading list and pushing a greater deficit? one that Brandon Quidham actually recommended to me, and I fell in love with it. I've read it twice now, is What Technology Wants by Kevin Kelly.
Okay, I'm gonna write it down.
It's this fascinating approach to technology innovation in general, talking about how we talk of technology as if it's a strictly human thing or a human creation, but that's not true, right? Because like chimpanzees mm-hmm. will use like a stick to get ants or whatever out of an anthill, and they'll use that to eat. So clearly technology is not a human-centric development. And he talks about how when you like, it's easier now with like the technologies we have, like our computers and our smartphones and our AirPods and all this other stuff. But when you look at the human species and technology together, they play off of each other and influence each other to develop. And like, there's like a natural selection, Darwinistic approach to it. And it looks and it, like it, they have like representations of intelligence and like adaptation and evolution. Like it's a really cool way just to like think about things.
Yeah. Thank you. And maybe if I can add, so I'm in this class called Language and Power. And again, it meets once a week. It's a seminar. So I've only had two classes of it. But one of the readings the other day was talking about and maybe, I mean, this is kind of obvious, but how much of a lag there is in our language to talk about technology and technologies. Yes. And so I think that's another really interesting component as well.
Yes, absolutely. I've actually written about that, not specifically with technology, but I agree with you 100%. What was the name of the book? Or is that a seminar you said it was?
It's a seminar. It's called Language and Power. But it was one of the readings for the course. I can go look and see which reading it was.
And boys and girls, if you're out there and you're new to Bitcoin, welcome to your new book club.
Yeah.
maybe a book racket club. Everybody writes a book. But the amount of good literature that's coming out of this, I think, is just one of those signs that we're in a new renaissance. And
yes. Yep.
That is, I think that's one of the coolest things is it's so neat to go have, like, I'm one of those crazy ones from the 1900s, right? Like a few of us on here. To be
Shane is much older than he looks. Yeah. Much older than he looks.
And to really see, you know, where we imagine things as kids, you know, and some things that we couldn't even imagine now that are, you know, developing at such an amazing rate of speed. Finding, you know, Ella, what you were talking about is finding the language to keep up with the amount of technology that's coming to pass it's daunting. And it's one of those great exercises in like the human spirit and evolution is how bad do you want to evolve? How bad do you want to keep up? How bad do you want to learn this exciting new, you know, path that we're on as a human species? And boy, what a great, maitre d', if you will, you know, these people that are ushering you in to this new era with some amazing brain power. It is a fantastic place. So we're going to try to make a list of all the books that we just listed on this one show. I will try to get them all in the show notes. I'll have to remember, you know, about what part of the show they were in. I'm going to write it down and go back and make links for all you guys.
Yes. Well, and I'm working on something too regarding books, because we do talk about books so much where, like, I think we have some good topics that can then build on, and then there's more books that you can build on top of that and kind of go getting outside of the Bitcoin space as well, because I mean, we talk about how Bitcoin touches all these other things and Bitcoin fixes everything. Well, we need to, a great quote that Ella said right at the top is like, what was it? Always be collecting dots, connecting dots. Like, that's a really good way to look at it. And Shane, it was like we mind melded or something. You talked about like a new renaissance. Like, that's exactly what I was about to say. It is so cool. Like, all the books, all the knowledge that is kind of being, it's exploding if you know where to look and if you're interested in looking at this. Like, hearing your story and like what all you're learning about right now kind of throws me back into like my college days of being so excited to learn all like this new stuff. But now I look back on it and I'm like, man, I was so blue pilled and I was learning all this. It definitely was helpful in the long run, but I kind of learned something that took me on the wrong track. You are so like at the forefront of technology and this renaissance that it's amazing. I kind of wonder have you ever thought about like, we all have like a blind spot, right? Have you thought about like, what is your blind spot? Or do you ever just think about like, what is the new thing that like is going to surprise me, that's going to catch me off guard?
No, I mean, and I wrote that in my proposal because, you know, I mentioned the sovereign individual and there's a line where it says humans, we have all these blind spots and we don't often see when these transitions in society happen. And so again, first principles in Bitcoin, like not fear, but I try to be aware of what are my blind spots? What am I taking for granted? What am I not realizing? And, you know, like Bitcoin is just the best ecosystem for me to try and be conscious of my blind spots and what I don't know. And so you wanted to touch on the points you said about kind of a new renaissance. I'm in a history class right now. It's called maybe Knowledge Revolutions or the Spanish Inquisition and Knowledge Revolutions. And so I know nothing about the Spanish Inquisition, really. I honestly didn't realize that was a part of the title when I signed up for it. But I I think you can learn a lot from history. And, you know, something that I've picked up on recently, and again, we're in the second week of classes, so I'm not that deep into all of this, so you can definitely fact check me. But that it kind of really started out of a, how do we tamp down the heresy? How do we keep control? And there was a huge emphasis. Well, I think there's a common joke like, oh, you never expected the Spanish Inquisition. But there was a really strong sentiment of, you know, don't look to math, don't look to science, you know, look to the church for the answer. And there was a lot of like the inquisitors, I think that's the right term, you know, even we read a lot of primary documents in this class. And in those, it's kind of clear that the inquisitors didn't often know what they were believing or what they are supposed to be doing, or there, you know, there was so much uncertainty. And so again, I say, I sit there and I think about Bitcoin in classes. I was kind of thinking, are we in, you know, not maybe not necessarily a new Renaissance, but to some extent a new Inquisition, you know, like instead of church and state again. And because, you know, Bitcoin is just math. Like it's just rooted with physics. And here we are like, oh, don't look at that. Like, you know, look at all this other stuff. And I think, you know, just being aware of history and transitions and what are my blind spots. That's what I am trying to do. And so, you know, why I'm so grateful also to study Bitcoin, because now I can actually try to do that. So anyways, that's kind of a fascinating thing that I didn't know about, but I wouldn't have otherwise learned.
I'm going to recommend one more book here. It's The Immortality Key, The Secret History of the Religion with No Name by Brian Marascu. I will have all this in the show notes, guys. I'm going to go back and do real solid here. It is fantastic. And it talks a bit about the Spanish Inquisition and why it happened towards the end. You know, I'm not going to spoil the book, but it is one of the greatest reads that I've ever had. It's a little lengthy, but well worth it.
So like sophomore lengthy, or like what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like 300-400.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ella, how do you normally consume your books? Do you read them hard copy? Do you do audiobooks or?
Yeah, actually I have some. So I hard copy and then I sticky note. And well, actually, you know, it's a new thing. I'm trying to be more organized because
sticky note,
it's been an evolution. I started with, so I have been, you know, a hard book or paperback for a long time. And then I was, I think, going back to school, and I maybe had an entire suitcase of books. And my dad was like, Ella, you know, this is just a lot. And so I was like, okay, let me try the Kindle thing. So I got a Kindle, and then I was like, oh, I'm going to get Readwise or something it was called, and I can highlight, and then I can control F my notes, and I'll be able to be so much more efficient. But now I'm back to just a physical book. I don't think I really learn when it's a Kindle, and it's just much harder. I love to annotate, probably too much. It takes me a while to get through books. So anyways, now I'm on to the sticky note where I kind of color coordinate different keys for different topics or reasons. But yeah, I'm a paperback or hardback book person.
I absolutely love a hardback. Like I love having just like bookshelves of the books that I've read, like like this is gonna sound little gay, but like Beauty and the Beast, like remember the library she was in?
Oh yeah,
might be too old for you, Ella, but like that library is just like, I would just, if my house could just be like a couple rooms like around that library, like that would be just like my dream home. But but what I would suggest or challenge, maybe not for like things that you really want to take notes on, because like that's good. Like actually reading it, I think is useful. Yeah. But if you're like, if you work out or you're just doing cleaning around like your room or whatever, I would challenge you, or mostly I'm challenging some of our listeners here, to start doing like audiobooks and work your way up to doing like 1.5 to 2 times speed. Make sure that you can like digest the information. Don't just have somebody in your ear and you can't understand it. But if it's something that is more, if you're reading something for entertainment, or it's not something you're, you know, trying to get a grade in, I challenge people to start doing that, because I've started doing that recently. And my challenge to myself is like one book a week right now. The first two books that I did for this year were long ones, so it took me a while. But I'm like on course right now for one book a week, and I'm keeping it up.
Wow.
And I'm trying to do it to where like I still can like retain the information, but it's almost like working out, where I've trained myself to get, for the most part, I can kind of get to 2x speed and retain the information. I challenge people to like just try it, like work your way up to it, because I think you can just start, especially if you are busy doing other things, you can like read a book while still being productive. Just something that you may not want to do for your coursework, but something that I would challenge you to do when it works, and challenge some of our listeners and viewers to do.
Yeah. Okay. Very briefly, let me add one thing here. There's different modes of learning, and different people have different ways of absorbing information. Some people like to read and they learn the best reading. Some people like to listen. Some people like to watch. Some people need to do in order to learn, like whatever it is, your style. I agree with Jordan. Like if you're the kind of person who likes to listen, like go out and get your 3 mile in. And
sometimes it depends on your mindset too, or your state of mind.
Yes.
Like I've noticed where like I can shift between the days. Like sometimes I need the book in front of me. Sometimes I just need to listen and I'll like absorb. It's all about awareness.
Yeah. Jordan, what do you use to do the audiobooks?
So I kind of hate shilling for it, because it's Audible, which is an Amazon company. I tried to do like where I subscribe to like their premium thing. And at first I was like, oh, this is a waste of money. But I've recently learned that it's like 30% off of every audiobook, plus you get a free book every month. So I was like, that's worth it. Once I figured out how it actually works. So like the 30% off of every book alone is like, that makes it worth it. And then you get like a token once a month to get a free book. So if you're basically, for every 3 books that I read at 30% off, I'll get a free book if I continue to do one a week. So,
okay.
And I think
I've got like 30 books in my library on Audible.
I was talking to Mike just like a couple weeks ago about how like I started off this year kind of with that plan, and I didn't think I had enough books, and now I've got like probably 30 books or something that I'm like, the trouble is like what to read next now. It's a good problem.
What I was thinking of when you were talking about the library is to think of a library like an armory of the mind.
Yeah.
Because that's basically what it is, right? Like you're like, this is all that I've learned. Look at all these chickens, right? But
look at all these chickens.
One of the great things about Bitcoin is going to be legacy. And, you know, I think when people look back, and you guys are going to be great examples of this, is, you know, I am one of those guys that needs to do a lot of menial tasks in my life just because of the type of lifestyle that I have. And I like to go out and hike. So that is the time for, you know, audio consumption. And that's the way actually I learned the best, like Alex was saying. But to have hard copies of all of these things, like not a bad idea, first and foremost. But secondly, to be able to leave that legacy, you know, like when you leave behind whatever it is in terms of Bitcoin that you're leaving behind for this next generation, maybe the generation after that and so on. If you can leave behind a library on top of that to see the evolution, where you came from, to have a grandkid or your own child peruse some of the same pages that you've read, to have that introspection, I think that's going to be something that's extremely special. I know I've got a few of my grandfather's books, and when I, you know, whenever I touch anything of that sort of, you know, importance and legacy, it always takes me back to something that was a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Innocent, first and foremost, because it was a different time for me. And I think with that comes this idea that we can be better people. We can be a better society, and we should be doing something to grow our own legacy, so that when, you know, times come, that that next generation has.
Plus, it's also good just that it's a decentralization aspect of just like, in case there is some sort of, you know, book burning thing,
digital book
burning. digital or physical, having the physical copy of just like being able to just help protect that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got another question for Ella, if we're ready to shift gears here. And the question is, okay, Ella, if you're talking to, like, I find that kids that are in high school, sometimes they just don't know what they should be doing. Like, they're looking at all this stuff in life and they're like, I don't know. Should I go to college? Should I not go to college? Like, which career should I be looking at? Like, what's important in life? And like, they have all this information just coming at them, right? And they're trying to figure out, okay, what do I do here? If you were going to give, you know, you had 5 minutes to sit down with somebody who's in high school and say, look, these are some of the most important things you should be thinking about to kind of map out the path for your life. Because I personally feel like people who are in, kids who are in high school are at a very important and pivotal junction where the things that they decide to do next will have an important impact on their entire arc of their life. Right. So the decisions they make right there are pretty important. If you had 5 minutes to sit down with a group of high school people, what would you say to them about that?
Yes. And I should refine my 5 minute pitch, but I have a couple of different things. Some of it is from this note from that my mom and I have. One is, normal is only a setting on the dryer. So I think in my life, like, I have tried to do the thing that's a little uncertain. Honestly, the thing that scares me a little bit. I mean, moving to China with one suitcase and I don't speak Chinese and I don't know my host family or anything else. Like, I was like, you know, when else in my life can I do this? And so for me, I've found more, you know, peace, success in doing the thing that scares me. But everyone doesn't need to do that. But I think, I love another quote, if you have life, you have purpose. So just go find it. So it doesn't have to be Bitcoin, just what in you, you know, is what you find joy or peace, or this makes me feel like I'm contributing something is. And then I love, I'm forgetting her name, but there's a really good TED talk. I think her name is, maybe I'll put it in the show notes, Meg something. But she encourages, so many people think that they can just breeze by their 20s and that it's, they're not important decades, but they are. And so she says, you know, go get yourself some identity capital, you know, go use your network. And so I think that's important. And then also, like, you don't, like, you can mess up. I mean, I'm sure I've made lots of mistakes. You're not, so it's not kind of a, if you don't do something now, you know, that's it. I think it's just, for me, how I've made decisions is knowing that there's no one normal path that I have to follow, that I've traditionally done things the more uncertain way. And I, looking back, it's worked out and I'm glad for how it's gone. So just keep doing that. And then, yeah, I think put your time and energy in a place where you feel peace, that you have purpose. So maybe I refine the 5 minutes, but I would say that it needs to be more broad what you would tell someone else. Like, I don't want to tell someone else what to think or what to do. Just more general guidelines of how I've lived my not so long life yet. And, you know, maybe I'll learn more. But that's what I would say.
Okay. Follow up. Mike, give me 1 second here. This is one that's really good. This is coming from Old Salt.
Oh, I was going to put it up on the screen.
This
here
is a really good point, because Ella, you clearly are forging your own path. You're a critical thinker. You're probably not very subject to peer pressure. Describe how you deal with the pressure on students, like wokeism, climate change, politics, all that stuff, and how do you stay true to your course?
I think you should have to think for yourself. And with Bitcoin, I think I've realized, you know, first principles, again, just have your own opinion, do your own work. And I think if you can just take a topic and maybe you can say, I don't know the answer to something, and think for yourself. I thought of another point that as another, a big quote in my life that my dad told me, it's a Jerry Rice quote, like today I will do what others won't. So tomorrow I can do what others can't. That's just like for me, another big guiding. And another, sorry, they're all coming back, but CC Chapman, it's like amazing things will happen if each day you just work hard and share all you know with all who ask. Those are other big kind of life guidelines for me. But Alex, to answer your question of how do you face the peer pressures, I just think the peer pressure, I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but if you think for yourself, the peer pressure doesn't exist because that's really just someone else trying to exert their belief on you. And you don't have to take it if you kind of can take your own opinion.
Let's go. Man,
I'm so jacked right now. I mean, I would never think that somebody as soft-spoken as you would
ever. Who doesn't even swear.
Yeah, you don't swear. Like, you've just sent me through the damn universe right now. This is a. If anybody out there has kids or anything like that, please let them watch this. And if you're, I don't know, if you have, you know, adults in your life who aren't Bitcoiners who are worried about the future, this is the model right here. I mean, for God's sakes, Ella, amazing, unreal, the amount of knowledge. This is what's possible, people. You know, if you're doing it, and Lisa, great job, by the way. and I don't know your dad, but I'm going to tell you right now, this is absolutely one of the best shows we've ever had. And I got to tell you, it's because of the substance you're putting out there. Incredible.
Thank you.
Let me point something out that's that I think is super important. It's not just the knowledge. There's knowledge. People are drowning in knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. There's a distinction between knowledge and wisdom, which is how you apply it. And that is super freaking important. And like, man, it's mind blowing.
I don't mean to cut you off, Ella. The thing I was going to add was the TED talk that you had mentioned is Meg J, why 30 is not the new 20.
Yes, yes, that's it. Yeah. No, I was just going to say I have incredible parents. And yeah, so I was just going to give them a shout out.
Awesome.
I've met half of them, I will say.
should we subject Ella to story time?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's been prepped.
Yes, this was also in the notes.
Yeah. So she's been read in, is what you're saying?
She's been read in.
Yeah. Okay. Story time, ladies and gentlemen.
She understands the mission briefing. Okay, so we do this with every guest. Like at the end of the show, we basically say, hey, can you tell us a story about something that happened in your life that was like maybe really freaking challenging and you hated it at the time, but in hindsight was super funny? Or any other story that you think would be really valuable for people to hear?
Yeah, well, maybe I wish you hadn't said they're really valuable for people to hear because I'm not sure how valuable this story is. But I was thinking about this and I had to ask my mom for help too with coming up with this. So I have always been a rule follower, kind of, you know, I always turned my homework in on time. You know, I never really asked for extensions. It was, anyways, I think it was sixth grade coming back to school and I did not do my math homework for the summer. And you had to do all these, it was called IXL, and there were all these different learning modules. And I had done part of it, I just hadn't finished it. And so I asked my mom, you know, can you please write me a note, an excuse saying, oh, Ella couldn't do it because of whatever reason. And she said no. And I was, you know, I really don't get upset, but I wasn't thrilled. And I was like, no, but please, like, I think maybe I cried, I don't know. And I was like, please, can I have a note? And she said no. And so I had to go and tell the teacher that I didn't do my homework. And, you know, can I still finished and turned it in at a later date. But since then, I still have never missed a homework deadline, to my knowledge. But anyways, I'm not really sure how valuable of a story that is, but that was just a memory there.
I'm going to say that your mom probably told you, no, you definitely cried. And you were like, no, I don't remember that.
I might have cried.
I might have. And that means your mom said you did.
Shout out to Lisa Huff. Good job. That's good parenting right there.
And I think she had told my grandmother that I had asked her to do this, and then my grandmother got upset. I was like, oh, you should have just done it. It would have been so easy for you to just write her a note. But I think the parenting strategy that my parents embodied was they're going to be the swim coach, not the lifeguard, or I might have that wrong, so she can correct me, but basically not going to jump in and save me, teach me how to swim. I need to go figure it out. But again, you asked like, what are the dots, like proof of work? You know, you're not just see, there's no staking, like you have to actually do the work. So
you're not preparing kids for life well by protecting them. And there's this thing where I totally agree with this, by the way, shout out to your parents. They sound like wonderful people and great parents because there are so many parents today who they think they're supposed to be their kid's friend. Like their primary purpose is to be their friend of their kid. And I disagree with that 100% because it's like, if you're doing that, you're shielding them from reality. They don't understand the consequences to their decisions. Your job is not to be their friend. Your job is to prepare them for life. And sometimes that means they're not going to feel like you're their friend, right? But at the end of the day, like it has been my experience that kids who have parents who do this later on, they still have a relationship with their parents, and they're like their friends later through their whole life. They're like, I talk to my parents still to this day about important things. Whereas the ones who take the approach of, well, I'm just going to be their friend, inevitably, almost in every case, the kids are like, by the time they're in their teenage years, they're like, I'm not going to listen to that person. Why would I listen to them? Why would I want to have a conversation with them about the hard things I'm going through with life?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm very lucky, and I talk to them both every day, multiple times a day. You know, it might be quick conversations, but I'm very grateful.
That's a sign. That's a sign of good parenting, in my opinion.
Another sign of great parenting is if you do this right as parents, and I will say this as a son, I am still learning from my parents from when I was a kid. So, you know, when something had transpired, my dad said something, and or my mom for that matter, but the dadisms obviously as a dad now stick out like sore thumbs, where you're like, oh my God, I sound just like him, and I'm still learning from him, and I understand why he did it this way now. And if you do it right, your kids are going to be learning from you well into their adulthood, hopefully well into, you know, even being grandparents after you're long gone. So yeah, what a fantastic way to great comment, Alex, is go out there and prepare for the world. It's not easy, but you know, you get them into the right crowds like Bitcoin networks, and you know, some of these things start to kind of take care of themselves a little bit. But yeah, the world is not an easy place, and pampering kids going into it, you know, you're setting them up for failure. That's for darn sure.
Absolutely setting them up for failure. Yeah.
Well, and also think if you do it right, like if you're a good parent and you set them up for success in life, then you kind of become friends later on, because then it's like, there's this mutual respect. Like you figured it out and you realize like why I was doing it. And there's kind of this like, all right, like I think some of the best friends I ever had in life, I've probably gotten to like fist fights with when, you know, we were younger, because it was like, you tested each other's limits. You may not be able to relate with this, Ella, but but like you kind of test each other's limits, and you'd kind of both figure out like where was too far, or you know, where you crossed the line, and you kind of, you're like, oh, okay, but like I am friends with you, and maybe I pushed you because I thought you were doing the wrong thing, or I crossed that line because I just pushed it too far or whatever, and you kind of figure it out. And those are some of the best friendships you have, is the ones that have really challenged each other, not the ones that are just like, yeah, dude, go have fun being an idiot. Like, no.
Hey, Jordan, Ella doesn't even swear, so cage fighting is probably. however, I will say that I would guess that let me know if this is correct. Like, because of you're so strong on your principles, I'm guessing there are a bunch of kids who look at you as sort of a leader, so to speak, and do follow you regardless.
Yeah, I guess I would go back to, I hope people think for themselves, and I don't really want people to follow me. I'd rather follow me in the sense that they can't think. I will say I had a friend, I was on the phone the other night, and I don't know, this might come off as a weird compliment. And she said, Ella, this might come across weird, but I mean this in the best sense. And she was like, you're just like conventional. She's like, you have standards and people know that you have standards and that you, I don't know, she phrased it as clear water. She's like, there's no ambiguity about what you'll stand for or what you won't. And, you know, I thought that was really nice. I took that as a compliment.
That is a compliment.
So,
yep.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm really grateful for my friends. I have, you know, some really great friends. And so I think all of them are very capable of thinking for themselves, but I certainly, I guess, would rather be a leader than an anti-leader. So I will take that.
Well, that's the best, your description of that is the best kind of leader. The one who's not trying to be a leader. They're just doing what's right and want everyone else to think for themselves. Like that's the kind of leader that you'd want. Somebody who's like, I'm going to do what it takes to be a leader. And it's like, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Being a great example, right? That's the way.
Yep.
I am just like thrilled to death to like get to know you. Can't wait to meet you in person. Like,
me too.
This has been awesome.
No, it's been great. Thank you.
Ella, how much time do you have left in your studies up there at Cornell?
I have a year. Well, I have a full year after this and then the rest of the semester, which has started. So we'll call it a year and a half.
And your aspirations for, you know, possibly, you know, as you're transitioning out of school and moving into the industry here.
Yes. So I'll take the long answer to this question. I have always tried to set really large goals. So when I was in sixth grade, I guess keeps coming up, I really wanted to be Secretary of State. And that is why I even went to China. Because I was like, okay, you know, I want to be Secretary of State because I just felt like it was, I don't know, it felt like it was a role that you could actually do something that had an impact. Full disclosure, I was very influenced by Madam Secretary, which is my favorite TV show. Anyways, and so I was like, okay, you know, I need to go to the best college I can. I want to learn leadership. And so I really wanted to go to the Naval Academy. I was like, okay, how do I get in there? And so I was like, I need to go to the best high school. Hence why I went to a boarding school for high school and why I went to China. So I say all that to say I used to have kind of really far out goals of what's next. And then I kind of refined it. I was interested in AI ethics. And I thought, okay, that's what I'll do after I graduate. And now, honestly, I'm a little bit in the I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing in a year and a half, because a year and a half ago, I never thought I would be here. But I think what I can tell you is that it will be something in Bitcoin, because, you know, I think once you're so far, like I can't do it anywhere else. So I'm not sure where I will be in a year and a half, what exactly I will be doing, but I can tell you that I'm pretty positive it will be in Bitcoin and doing some job where I can wake up and do something with purpose that has some positive impact on someone else. And I think the best way to do that and live that type of life is to do it through a Bitcoin company, Bitcoin ecosystem.
Let's go. Hell yeah. Well, Ella,
I don't know if this would make you feel better or make you feel worse, but
yeah,
if it does make you feel better, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do when I'm so
yeah.
Take that for how you will.
Yeah. And my parents also used to say the job you'll have probably hasn't even been created. And then my mom refined it recently and she said the industry maybe hasn't even been created. Yeah. I mean, obviously we have Bitcoin.
Straight up.
But
you might create it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Love it. Guys, it's 8:20 already. You got some parting thoughts here? Some ideas that you want to throw out there before we can wrap this bow up?
I would say we loosely touched on this in the beginning, but in March, Generation Bitcoin is going to be kind of announcing the Bitcoin Students Network, which is what the Cornell Bitcoin Club is kind of one of the guinea pig clubs in. So more details will follow on that. But I would say if you are a student listening, one, the announcement earlier, if you want to go to Bitcoin 24, reach out because we do have tickets for that. And then also look at Generation Bitcoin and the Bitcoin Students Network Both of those are really on a mission to help make it easier for you students to learn about Bitcoin and then also participate in Bitcoin. So I think I would leave with those thoughts to students.
Awesome.
I got nothing I want to add.
Ella, I just want to, if whenever we do wrap up, if you want to hang out for a little bit after the show, there's some things that I think we could work on mutually that we'd need to, before we air our dirty laundry out to everybody, before things are finalized. I would love to, I think there's some great things that we're working on as an organization that I think maybe we could get you and what your organizations are working on. So if you would just hang out afterwards, I think we could talk
for
about
sure. Cool stuff. That would be great. Thank you. Yes. And you know, that's kind of, you know, something with the Students Network. I know I haven't really touched on it yet, but there's so many great initiatives happening. And this is specifically focused on education. But I think it can be really hard to find them and to find Bitcoiners, especially just for students who aren't on Twitter. Because if you're not really in Bitcoin Twitter, it can be hard to be in the know. And so just anything, like the huge part is increasing collaboration, kind of being a connector of resources. So would love to talk about that.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. I'll add one closing comment. And that is, Ella, I think people like yourself give, this may sound a little weird, but I think you give hope to people who are a little older, because people who are a little older who sort of look at the dots and have connected the dots, some of us, you know, prior to Bitcoin especially, are like, man, the human race is in trouble. We have some challenges that we're dealing with, and it gives me personally a great deal of hope. And I think that's true for more than just me. I think, you know, people have been talking about it in the chat tonight, watching the show. I think there's a lot of people who are like, man, thank God we have a new generation of people who are on the mission, who are figuring this out, who understand this is probably the most important thing that's happened to the human race in maybe a couple hundred years, no hyperbole. And so like, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm very proud of you. I think you're freaking awesome. Based as hell. Wade Hoke is like, we need to clone her. I agree 100%. Like, man, we need a million more of you plus. You. So I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. And well, I'll say that there's, you know, there needs to be a lot more young people in Bitcoin, but there are a lot, you know, all over the world that I've gotten to know and kind of be connected with. And so maybe just to add to your hope that there's, you know, more people out there, there are a lot of us and there will be more to come. But thank you, Alex. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And Alex, because of what you said, like, I just want to add this because I didn't even think about it till you said it, but, you know, as a, from the millennial generation that seems to be the ones getting shit on no matter, like, oh, up, oh, there I go, sorry, Dane, got your money back. We're the ones that, like, everyone says, oh, it's the millennials, even if it's like, you know, we're like 40 now, right? Like, we're not the kids anymore. But what I don't want to be is, I don't want to be the one that is just, I've already done it, so I'm gonna say it again, shits on the younger generation. Because, like, even if a lot of them are doing stupid things, like, there are still good people in that generation, in every generation, that we need to tap into. So I would challenge the audience to also not fall into that trap of just blaming a generation. Like, no, like, find the voices like you, Ella, who are just amazing, and help amplify them, help support them so that they can also help build and change their generation and make us feel like I don't want to be the old guy in 20, 30, 50 years or whatever, you know, young kids, you know, I want to be like,
get off my lawn.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, stay off my lawn. But but no, like, I want to be like, well, we've worked to get, why don't we work together to fix the world instead of just being like, it's you. Like, no, it was the boomers. So let's, end it there and we'll fix it.
Also, let me add, Ella, as you progress here, like, I want to speak on behalf of our group and our team. I just want to say that, like, if there's anything the Bitcoin veterans can do to support what you're working on, tag us, DM us, let us know. We will back you up 100%. Let's freaking go.
So I was gonna add on to that. I was actually gonna ask you specifically, Ella, are there any initiatives or goals you're trying to like achieve or look for? Like, are there like in specific internships you're looking for with any of the Bitcoin companies that like we might be able to help out with? Like, is there anything like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, yes, for myself personally, I am on the job hunt for this summer. But then there's a lot of, you know, I message with a lot of people my age in Bitcoin that also want jobs in Bitcoin. And, you know, I know like Bitcoin Talent is working on that, Bitcoiner Jobs, Generation Bitcoin did a partnership with Bitcoiner Jobs to try. But, you know, it's a little somewhat tricky because there's hard skills like software development or marketing that apply to Bitcoin. But I think there's a lot of students that, you know, Bitcoin is new. It's not something that's taught in universities, and they're really eager. They want to participate, but just how do we get these students into jobs in Bitcoin where it's kind of charting a new territory? And figuring that out for them as well. And another point that I just wanted to make on my generation, I think from when I've talked to people and my own self, it's really just a matter of asking the right questions, just prompting it correctly. Because so much of what you learn in Bitcoin, you're never going to just, I don't think you're going to encounter that question to find this answer that Bitcoin brings. And so Bitcoiners, I think, can also help. You know, you don't need to come at it with, here's the answer, this is what's wrong, this is the solution, but just start like percolating the questions, because people my age are curious. They want to learn. They're not trying to take anything for granted. It's just a matter of life in a sense. So yes, specific things, I think jobs would be hugely helpful, because myself, you're more incentivized to learn something if you can then participate in it. And there's so much demand on time. If you're in college and you need a job, well, you're either going to do the 400 IB prep question because you're trying to get it, you know, you need to put your energy in what can get you a job. And if there's no job in Bitcoin, it might fall into the hobby passion topic category. As well,
we don't want a bunch of people with a Bitcoin degree being a barista at a coffee shop. Like, we want them doing Bitcoin stuff.
Yeah, and you know, we've touched on this, the Bitcoin industry is developing. Like, I think every business will eventually become a Bitcoin business, and there's so many new areas, there's so much happening, and we just need to apply this. Like, let's just all come figure it out. Let's just be curious, dive into uncertainty, do what's not normal. And just have space for that in jobs as well.
Is there a specific, I really appreciate your humility, but I'm going to take it back to you again.
Okay.
is there a specific like field or focus of an internship that you're looking for? Like, I'm like, maybe you are, maybe you aren't, but I'm going to assume you're not specifically looking for doing the hardware stuff like Bitcoin mining of going out into the Texas Midland, Texas fields and loading up ASICs in 110 degrees, right?
Yeah.
Like, what kinds of stuff are you like specifically looking at that is going to, obviously, I'm assuming, is also going to feed into your field of study at Cornell?
Yes. Actually, if it's okay, I'm happy to answer it, but maybe if we answer it after we stop recording, if that's okay.
Yep.
That's an honest answer.
I think we'll go ahead and wrap this up and get to that then. Ella, you have been a spectacular guest. And I got to tell you, I am not shocked in the least that you have been. I am surprised at just how good it's been. And I mean this. This crowd is growing like I've never seen before. And I think it's because of our guests. And you know, the value that you have brought tonight to this show, I've got to say, it's blown me away. I think it is absolutely off the charts. I think we are all smarter and have more hope because of you.
Shane's definitely smarter. Oh,
yeah. He's going to eat two less crayons tonight.
Maybe. But at the end of the day, guys, like I am so thankful for everybody here that continues to work, that continues to put this together, that continues to pull this off week after week, and everything that's going on behind the scenes. You guys are all spectacular out here, and I got to tell you, it's an absolute honor to be with you guys at least once a week, and to be working with you blazing this future. And it's a blank slate, guys. Listen, the Bitcoin industry, the Bitcoin community, everything that we're doing in Bitcoin is almost a blank slate. So if you want to go out there and blaze a trail and light the way, just light the way, and I guarantee you things are going to happen, especially if you're putting in the work, the proof of work, that long time horizon that we always talk about. This is the way. Ella, I am super confident in your internship or whatever you're trying to get into. They would be silly not to have you. I wish you the best at Cornell. And for everybody else out there, I will have all the show notes and everything tomorrow morning for the show. You can find them all there. And I appreciate everything you guys are doing. Until next week, we will see you then. It's Bitcoin Veterans. We do this every Thursday at 7. We will see you next week. Peace.
Thank you. Bye.